Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour, along with Mike Murphy. Thank you for joining us and listening in. Before we get into the weather, I just want to make a brief comment about the wild ones. This was an observation I made a few days ago when I was lying in bed. I live in the bottom part of a split-level house, and there are a lot of daddy long legs where I live. So I was in bed, and there were these two daddy long legs that were hanging by a thread from the shelf to near my bed. And so they were kind of on my eye level, and they were hanging in the air and kind of slapping each other, and I was trying to figure out what they were doing. And then one of them kind of collapsed, and the other one rolled him up into a ball and wrapped him up into a little package. And then I came back a few hours later to see what happened, and the wrapped up package was gone. So I think the one that was wrapped up got eaten. So anyway, I don't know exactly what that was all about, but it was really interesting. And if somebody understands Daddy Longlegs, write to khoiradio@gmail.com. And if nobody writes to me, I'm going to have to do some research on whether Daddy Longlegs are cannibalistic, because it seems like he ate his, I think that was a competitor. Anyway, that's the wild ones, and they do live in our house at least, and possibly yours. Okay, the weather, cool this morning. If you've not been outside yet, you can wear a jacket. There is a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms today after 4 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high near 81. At night, you can expect a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the middle of the night or very early in the morning. Tuesday sees the continued possibility of showers and thunderstorms earlier in the day, and then it's expected it'll become gradually sunny and still temperatures in the low 80s. Clear skies should continue then until Thursday night, with days in the low to mid-80s and nights in the 60s, with cool mornings. Thursday night is predicted to have a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, and a possibility like that will continue from Friday through Saturday. By Saturday night, the sky should get clear again, and Sunday is predicted to be a dry but beautiful sunny day with temperatures in the low 80s. So not a huge hope for rain this week, but a little bit, and possibly a little bit relief. Okay, here is Mr. Dennis Hart with a summary of Iowa news from this past week.
The coronavirus just kept on making big news all around the state last week. But we begin with word that one of those U.S. service members killed in the bombing at the Kabul airport in Afghanistan was a Marine from Iowa. 23-year-old Dagan William Tyler Page was raised in Red Oak in the southwestern part of the state and graduated from Millard South High School in Omaha. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds called him a selfless person with a big heart, dedicated to the community, state, and country he served. U.S. Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa, who is also from Red Oak, called the news heartbreaking. Now, the coronavirus. It kept spreading around the state last week just as the school year was starting. More than 7,000 new virus cases were reported in Iowa last week, with the average daily number of new cases topping 1,000 for the first time since January. More than half those cases were among people younger than 40, and 17% were younger than 17 years old. Those are the age groups that have the lowest vaccination rates. There were also 42 more deaths from the virus in Iowa last week, and the number of people hospitalized with it also went up to nearly 500. That's compared to fewer than 50 people hospitalized with the virus 2 months ago. And 79% of those hospitalized in Iowa with the coronavirus have not been vaccinated. There was also word that vaccinations in Iowa have stalled, and that only 12 other states have seen a greater slowdown in new vaccinations. Only 13 other states have seen a bigger increase in new infections over the past week. About 200 protesters picketed outside Des Moines' Mercy One Medical Center on Friday afternoon, expressing their disapproval of decisions by Mercy One and the area's 7 other hospitals to require workers to be vaccinated against the virus. Meanwhile, the chief of the Iowa Supreme Court signed an order last Friday making masks mandatory in areas controlled by the courts. That order said all people entering court-controlled areas must wear a face covering regardless of the person's vaccination status. The requirement applies statewide, and it contradicts Governor Reynolds' longtime policy against mask mandates. And the Polk County Health Department said it would reinstate visitor restrictions at Metro hospitals because of the coronavirus. And last week, Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller said his office was still looking into whether a mask mandate issued by Iowa City violates state law. Iowa City Mayor Bruce Teague declared a civil emergency August 19th and issued a citywide mask mandate. There was also word that 5 Iowa nursing homes were said to be in coronavirus outbreak status, and 4 of the 5 were in counties that had low vaccine acceptance rates. The state defines that status as a nursing home having 3 or more infections. The biggest outbreak was in the Montrose Health Center in Lee County, where 14 workers and or residents had been infected with the virus. The other nursing home outbreaks were in Plymouth, Black Hawk, Hardin, and Marion counties. And while all this was going on, the nation's top health care administrator came to Iowa last week and said that anyone who doubts they need a coronavirus shot should see how many unvaccinated people are struggling with the disease in hospitals' intensive care units. Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra visited the Polk County Health Department. He said unvaccinated people make up 99% of Americans who are dying from the coronavirus. Also last week, federal regulators granted full approval to the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine. That's a milestone that many hope could help increase inoculation rates and spark a wave of vaccine mandates by employers. There was also word that people were visiting some Iowa farm supply stores to buy a deworming drug for horses and other livestock that some conservative political leaders and commentators have been touting as an alternative to the coronavirus vaccine. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has issued a warning against using it to treat the virus after receiving reports from around the nation about poisonings from its use in humans. And there was also word that the amount of coronavirus floating in Des Moines area sewage had more than doubled in the past 2 weeks. The city's Metropolitan Wastewater Authority has been sending in samples of sewage for testing since July. Such testing offers a rough measure of how prevalent a virus is in a community. The answer in central Iowa, very prevalent. In fact, there's a higher concentration of coronavirus here than is found in 85% of samples sent in by other U.S. cities. Also last week, thousands of Iowa students ended their summer vacations with the familiar rituals of returning to school, including going back to not wearing masks. State law prohibits schools from requiring teachers, students, or visitors from wearing masks, and no coronavirus vaccines have been approved for kids younger than 12. That leaves thousands of students without the shot's protection. This, as the Federal Centers for Disease Control said, every person in Iowa, vaccinated or not, should wear a mask inside public spaces because of the increased spread of the coronavirus. Meanwhile, the Des Moines School Board said it would not try to circumvent state law and put a mask mandate in place. Superintendent Tom Ahart and some board members had floated the idea of pushing forward with universal masking in spite of a state law that forbids it. And in a related story, the mother of 2 children in the Council Bluffs School District sued the state over the law that bans mask mandates in schools. Frances Parr is the mom of 2 boys who would have been starting first grade this fall. They are now being homeschooled. In other news last week, a group of Iowans sued Governor Reynolds over her decision to end a set of federal jobless benefit programs early. The Republican governor ended the state's participation in 3 federal pandemic jobless programs in June, nearly 3 months before they were set to expire. Those programs extended unemployment benefits to more workers and provided an extra $300 a week to jobless workers. Also last week, an inmate who had pleaded guilty to the killings of 2 Anamosa State Penitentiary employees in Iowa was sentenced to life in prison. 38-year-old Thomas Woodard Jr. was one of 2 inmates charged with first-degree murder in the beating deaths of Anamosa employees Lorena Schulte and Robert McFarland. A trial is set to begin this coming month for the other inmate, Michael Dutcher. Meanwhile, the man convicted of killing University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts is scheduled to be sentenced later today. Christian Bahena Rivera was convicted this past May for killing Tibbetts in 2018. He was first scheduled to be sentenced in July, but his lawyers requested a new trial and argued that new witnesses had come forward suggesting another man had confessed to Tibbetts' killing. The judge rejected the motion for a new trial. In another story, a U.S. District Court judge dismissed an Iowa lawsuit over California pork regulations. The lawsuit from the Iowa Pork Producers Association challenged the California law that bars the sale of pork derived from breeding facilities that fail to allow a certain amount of space for each animal. The law goes into effect in January of next year. Also last week, the Indianola School Board decided to delay any move to change the name and logo of the district's athletic teams until after November's school board election. The team name in the district is Indians, and some consider that offensive, while others think it's not. It's a controversy that's been going on in school districts around the nation, and whatever has been decided has generally left a significant number of people in the district unhappy. In the world of politics last week, Iowa State Representative Christina Bohannon of Iowa City announced she would run for Congress in the state's 2nd congressional district. She became the first Democrat to challenge first-term incumbent Republican Congresswoman Marionette Miller Meeks. Bohannon is a law professor at the University of Iowa. And Republican U.S. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas showed up in Iowa this past weekend to campaign for incumbent Republican Congresswoman Ashley Hinson in the 1st Congressional District and Republican challenger Nicole Hasso in the 3rd Congressional District. In the world of television last week, a former WHO-TV anchor filed an age and discrimination lawsuit against the station's parent company, Nexstar Media Group. 54-year-old Sonia Heitzhusen alleges she was, in the lawsuit's language, thrown out to pasture because she was no longer seen as camera-worthy on the station. She had been at WHO-TV 17 years when she was let go last summer. And there was word that Polk County had committed up to $7 million toward construction of a new professional soccer stadium in downtown Des Moines. County supervisors approved the money as part of a plan to build a 6,300-seat stadium as the home of a USL Championship League team at the former Dyco Superfund site between Martin Luther King Jr. Parkway and the Raccoon River. And one more note before I take my leave on this Monday, and it's about a couple of things that came to an end a week ago Sunday. One was the Iowa State Fair in Des Moines. The fair closed after having had nearly 1,100,000 people attend during its 11-day run. That was about 100,000 fewer people than attended in 2019. Last year, of course, the fair could not take place because of the coronavirus pandemic. And with the end of the fair came the end of the line for Bill Riley Jr. as MC of the talent show that bears his dad's and his name at the fair. Bill Jr. had MC'd that show for the past quarter century after taking over for his dad, Bill Sr., who had started the show. Together, dad and son had MC'd the event for more than 60 years. Bill Sr. is dead now, and while Bill Jr. is stepping away from the main stage, he isn't going far. Bill Jr. plans to work to grow the foundation that supports the talent search, thus ensuring that the Riley legacy lives on in perpetuity. And surely, any Iowan who's ever performed in a Bill Riley talent show over these past decades, and any Iowan who's ever been in the audience for one, will hope that's the case. And that is your summary of the week's news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, leaving now, but planning to come back tonight at 7 for KHOI's Capital Week, when Laura Bellin and I will talk about politics, Iowa style, and what's been going on that affects all of us. Then I'll return to this same virtual seat on Local Talk on Friday, when I'll have word on what's been making news in Ames. I hope you can be here for all of that. In the meantime, go ahead. Have a great week.
I want The League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County held a march on Saturday in conjunction with marches and rallies held across the country in support of voter rights. People gathered around 8:30 in the morning at Brookside Park. KHOI's Mary Richards was on hand and suggested I might want to talk to the woman who came over from Boone County.
My name's Joe Hutchins.
Oh.
I live in Ames, actually,
oh,
now.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay. Uh-huh. But you're from Boone?
Well, I lived in Boone County for a long time,
Oh,
yeah.
I got you.
She's still one of us.
Yeah. You can take the girl out of Boone, but you can't take Boone out of the girl.
I guess that's right.
What brought you guys from Boone County here today?
Barb Wheelock.
I think everybody's concerned right now about what is happening with voter suppression. And it's up to the people to speak out about that. That's what brought me here. I'm very concerned about it.
And Mary's telling me about a reenactment you guys had a while back. Does anyone want to speak about that? Or what's your name?
Amy Schleyer. Boone had one of the first suffragette parades in, I was thinking it was 1908, but I can't remember for sure. So we did a reenactment on the 100th anniversary of it. So it's been a while now, but everybody was in costume. And we had a big crowd. Went downtown and reenacted the speeches and did everything.
After a few photos, it was then time to march from Brookside Park to City Hall.
Cross at the crosswalk, over to that side of the sidewalk, and stay on that sidewalk all the way up to 6th Street, turn on Northwestern, go past Wheatfield, stay on that until you get to Clark, and then cross over Clark because there's a four-way stop.
All in all, 25 to 30 participants took part in the march and rally and voter registration drive. When the group arrived at City Hall, there was a booth set up for voter registration. I had a chance to speak with some of the people who participated.
I'm Barb Peterson with the League of Women Voters, and I am the chairperson of Voter Services Committee.
So what does the Voter Services Committee do?
Well, we establish the candidate forums in the fall before the elections, and we also canvass to get people to register to vote. And this year we are also developing a video with Lucy Martin in the auditor's office, a video to support voter integrity. And we hope to get that information out to as many people as possible in the county. Well, we hope to have it done by 1st of September, so soon.
So can you give us a little sneak preview of what that video will entail?
Yes, it talks about how to register to vote, all of the rules and regs of voting as far as dates, when you need to have this in and when you need to have that in. And it also talks about what they actually do in the auditor's office before an election and also what happens in the auditor's office after the election, just to show the integrity piece of the whole process.
Oh, that's great. And what brings you out here today?
We are supporting the vote. We see that in our state legislature and across the country, too, there have been many legislators that are crimping down on how easy it is to vote. Voting should be made as easy as possible, and we see that being infringed upon, and so we want to show our support for making it easy, accessible, but safe and full of integrity, our voting process.
Are most of the people here with the League of Women Voters? Or
yes. Yeah. Yes. As far as I know, everyone here is with the League of Women Voters. Yes.
Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
Make sure you're registered to vote. Make sure you know all of the dates as to when you can start voting. Go to the county auditor's website to see all the rules and regulations. And keep an eye out for this video that we're putting out on voter integrity. We're going to have posters all over town with a QR code that you can click on, and it'll take you right to the video. It's going to be on YouTube, and make sure that your voting records in the auditor's office are up to date. If you haven't voted in a couple years, make sure you get re-registered because you could be I don't know exactly how many years it is that you do not vote before they take you off the records, but make sure that your voting status is up to date.
How long have you been with the League of Women Voters?
Just about 3 years, I think. A group of friends and I, we started looking for something after the Sandy Hook shooting. Felt very frustrated. We wanted to be able to do something, and we discovered that we needed to do something on the local level. And so someone had mentioned League of Women Voters, and we jumped on that. And it's an amazing group of people, not only women, but we have men too. It's an amazing group of people. The people that I've got to know through the League, I just so appreciate. They're wise, they are active. And I just really appreciate the things that I've been able to do and the people that I've been able to know through the League.
Do you live in Ames?
Yeah, I live in Ames.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Sonia Paulson, and I am a UVROC senator as well as a civic engagement chair for student government.
And UVROC is?
United Off-Campus Residents.
And you?
My name is Daniel Hayes. I'm also a UVROC senator for student government.
Oh, terrific. And what brings you out here today?
The League of Women Voters reached out to the Civic Engagement Committee and asked if we'd want to do this march with them today. And so we're just out here supporting. And yeah,
it's always good to fight for, you know, different voting rights, even in our local community. You know, this is something that's very important to us, and we hope that more students can take a look at that too.
Terrific. Anything else you'd like to add?
Make sure to register to vote if you aren't already. It's super important.
And lobby for expanded voter rights.
What do you mean by expanded voter rights?
So I mean, like, just recently there's been, like, some suppression within the state. I know Sonia was just explaining a lot of it to me, so I'm going to be a parrot. But when it comes to, like, the amount of time that you have to do your mail-in ballot or the amount of, like, drop-in boxes that are located in the county have both been, like, decreased within the state of Iowa. And it's, like, important to, you know, allow people the opportunity to have, you know, flexible voting options, because we want to make it as easy for everybody to participate in our democracy as possible.
I noticed you and the young man over there from the university, are, besides myself, are the only males here. What brings you out?
Well, my wife here.
He's the fundraising chair.
Yeah.
That's what brings
The League welcomes men, despite their name. And, you know, they do good things, so figured let's do our share. Let's help out.
I neglected to get this last gentleman's name, which is a shame, not only because he's the fundraising chair of the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County, but also because he had a spare AAA battery, which saved this reporter's recording. All of this took place in conjunction with similar rallies throughout the country, centered around the 58th anniversary of the March on Washington led by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in August of 1963, which ultimately led to the historic Voting Rights Act of 1964. For KHOI Community Radio, I'm Mike Murphy.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, hosting with Mike Murphy. Thank you, Mike, for that report on the rally, which was sponsored by the League of Women Voters together with the government of the student body, held in Ames on Saturday. Carolyn Klaus, president of the Story County League of Women Voters, has joined us. Thank you, Carolyn, for taking time to speak with us more about the rally and the ideas behind it. It's good to have you with us.
Good morning, Ursula. I'd not heard the interview, but it was great to hear our representatives at the March Saturday speak so highly of the League and the importance of voting registration. So thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a very positive event. I myself was actually in Iowa City covering a parallel rally in Iowa City, and we'll play some recordings of that probably in the near future, either on Local Talk or on Capital Week. But I wanted to focus a little bit on the ideas and the concepts behind the rally in Ames, and appreciate you coming on to speak with us about that. This was part of a national day of rallies around the country, correct?
Yes, it was. The theme for it was March On for Voting Rights, And it was basically to promote the For the People Act and the John Lewis Act, which is going through the National Congress and the Senate. It's just bringing the Voting Rights Act back. The John Lewis brings back the Voting Rights Act, and For the People Act regulates the voting rules and regulations across the United States so they're more uniform. You shouldn't have to move to another state to be able to avoid voter suppression.
So talk to us a little bit about the For the People Act. What were you actually out there to support?
Okay. I had recently heard a presentation for the People Act, and it's basically modernizing voter registration. When you turn 18, you're automatically registered to vote. So if you want to change your voting status or your location, that's all you have to do. You are registered to vote. It restores voting rights.
So excuse me for a minute. I interrupt. I just wanted to make sure I heard that right. So you're saying essentially you're registering to vote is not a local activity, that it's an activity almost kind of like citizenship where you can move around and do it in different places. Is that what you're saying?
That's what it looks like it would do, that when you're turned 18, you would be registered to vote. You would need to update your records all the time, and that's always a challenge with voter registration. But getting people to register the first time is difficult. So at least they would be registered and we could find them in the polls someplace.
So it's like a second form of very intentional citizenship.
Right. You know, that's the one right that you get when you're born in America. You get to be a citizen and you get to vote. But you have to register at 18 to get to vote. So that's the Restoring the Voting Rights Act and territorial voting rights. One of the fun things registering voters is a young man a week ago at Destination Iowa State. He goes, now I'm an American citizen from the Virgin Islands. I can't vote. And I says, we can register you here as a student. And that always is, wow, I get to vote as an American citizen. But you can't do it in the Virgin Islands, but you can do it at Iowa State and in Story County now.
So people living in the Virgin Islands, they're American citizens, but they can't vote in the Virgin Islands?
No, they cannot.
So U.S. territories can't vote?
No, they do not get to vote as American citizens.
But can Puerto Ricans vote?
No.
Huh, I didn't know that. So you have to be in a state to vote.
Correct. But you are an American citizen, and when you end up here going to Iowa State, and I would say about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I think Iowa State must have done some recruiting in Puerto Rico, and we really registered several from Puerto Rico that year. And and that was how I learned that. And I thought, wow, isn't this wonderful that they don't have to go through the citizenship, but they do have to go through the voter registration. So,
So For the People Act would make it possible for people in territories to vote. They would be able to vote in the United States?
Right. If they were living in a location where there was an election, they don't have elections in Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, our territories that are recognized. So, but if they move to the mainland or Hawaii or Alaska, they do. So,
This is Mike Murphy. To be clear, the people in Puerto Rico or the U.S. Virgin Islands do get to vote in local elections, the mayor or whatever like that. It's just that as territories, they don't have electors, they don't have Congress people, they don't have senatorial representation.
Do they vote on presidents?
Well,
no.
Don't have electoral votes.
Oh, right, the electoral college, right.
I think some of the parties recognize their primaries. I know they go down to Puerto Rico and campaign, your presidential people. They want those people. So it's confusing. I suppose if you were from Puerto Rico and flew into the United States, you know, a couple weeks or, you know, we have Election Day registration and declared a residency here, you could vote. So.
Well, okay, so let's get back to the For the People Act. Thank you, Mike, for that clarification. What else is the For the People Act? What else is its principles?
It's, you know, they're working very much on campaign transparency, countering foreign interference, empowers small donors and related reforms, enforcing campaign finance laws. You know, it's really, let me show you, here's my list, but it's an 815-page document. So I've got a few details on it, but very little.
What do you see as kind of the pivotal or crucial aspects of the act that makes it important to support? What does it stand for?
Uniformity from across all 50 states. That, I think that's extremely important because it's amazing how many people will come up to register and they'll have an idea that they have to have this, or when they go to vote, they have to have that. And you find, you know, they've been listening to the news, but that was in a different state that they have to do it. So uniformity is what it entails. The John Lewis Act brings back the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which when states make changes in voting, it has to go through the Department of Justice to basically determine whether there is discrimination.
For those that aren't exactly clear on what the Voting Rights Act stands for, it's essentially saying that everybody has a right to vote, right?
Right.
And that they can, in a sense, sue or take some action if they feel they've been discriminated against.
Right. It could be through gerrymandering. It could be through, you know, taking away ballot boxes in different places. There's so many different ways to make it difficult to vote. You have to make it easy. You have to make it easy. You have to make it so you feel good about doing the voting. So I have some interesting statistics about Congress and the way they look at the populace of people. We're different. The 117th Congress in many is the most diverse Congress we've ever had in the United States. But diverse is 77% white. Diverse is 74% male. 10% have given birth to a baby.
Wow. That's an amazing statistic.
5% have worked in a blue-collar job.
Wow.
And two-thirds of Congress are millionaires.
Hmm.
Here's an interesting statistic about the Supreme Court. 215 members have been, 215 jurors have been on the Supreme Court. All but six are white men.
Wow, those statistics paint a very vivid portrait of leadership in this country, don't they?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple quotes that came out of those statistics. Does the lived experience come to the table? And the other one is a fair fight of ideas is what elections are about. So do the right ideas come to give a fair fight for elections?
Yeah, whose voices are that conversation, right?
Right. But those statistics are invaluable when you realize, who is represented.
That's very interesting, Carolyn. Thank you. That's a vivid image you've painted for us there. Probably not going to be able to forget that image of the 5%.
Right.
Yeah. Before you go, Carolyn, I was wondering if I could just ask you a little bit about the activities of the League. Oh, and by the way, where is the For the People Act? Where is it? What's happening right now with it?
It has passed the House, and then it will go to the Senate. It has to overcome a filibuster, and the same way with the John Lewis Act.
Both of those acts have passed the House, and now are in the Senate.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Has President Biden indicated whether he would sign them?
Oh, I'm sure he would. I think these are part of what he supports with voting rights reform. Voting is not a partisan issue. Voting is something that we should have for all Americans. And I really work as a League of Women Voters member to support that and to promote it. When I joined the League, it's been 11, 12 years ago, I met with the president then, and she said, Carolyn, what do you want to be involved in? And we got to talking. She said, you know, our voter registration, we don't have a big program going with that. We aren't doing what we should do. And I took that on. And now I really, really want to go to wherever we can get voters registered. We did the Destination Iowa State. We did our little booth on Saturday. You know, we don't do anything without having a clipboard with voter registration forms.
It sounds like you're also really entering into voter education as well. We heard about the video when Mike was interviewing folks at the rally. So kind of a citizenship voter education seems to also be part of your agenda, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You know, when I register students, as soon as they're registered, I challenge them to be an educated voter, you know, and we also have it's votevote411.org. That will be up around the middle of September. We ask all the candidates for the city and school board election 4 or 5 questions. They have the opportunity to answer those questions, and they will be online until the election day on November 2nd. So that gives you a chance to find out about the candidate. If there's, you know, if you have a strong opinion about something and you find out that this person is in agreement with you, that's who you want to vote for. Or if you find out, wow, I can't let that person in our city government or on our school board, that's how you can learn some of those things. Vote411.org. You put in your zip code and you can find out about local elections.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And you're also going through some effort to reach out to young voters, right? You're going to schools?
Yes. We'll be going to schools to do some, you know, where we can give them the information. We will be participating in the National Voter Registration Day on August 28th. We'll be at the library. Let me reach out to your listeners. If you have a function that you feel there's people that need to register, contact the League of Women Voters. You can go to our website. You'll find it, you know, LWV Ames and Story County, and send us an email and contact us. We will try to get somebody out there to get you registered and to educate you.
Now, this video that's being created, is that something that the person that is listening to us talk, if they may want to have access to the video to show somewhere, is this something that will be made available for people to use?
It's going to be on YouTube.
That's about as easy as it gets.
It doesn't get much easier. We're going to have, like Barb had said in the interview, we're putting up posters with a QR code. Students are really good with QR codes. But you put your phone up there or put it in there, and you can watch the video.
Okay, so you've heard Carolyn. She is basically saying whatever you want, they will help you do it to get people registered to vote and to get them educated. Am I hearing that correctly, Carolyn?
That's right.
Okay, and again, the way to reach the League of Women Voters, I mean, they're easy to find online. You have a website where you can be contacted, right?
Correct. I give my phone number, but maybe somebody would call me right away and say I was wrong, so I'm not going to give it online.
Okay, well, thank you, Carolyn Klaus, president of the Story County League of Women Voters. And thank you, Mike, for going out there on Saturday and speaking with some of the people at the rally. Like I said, I was in a rally at Iowa City that was led by the mayor of Iowa City, and we took some comments from folks there, too, and we will air those later on KHOI. And KHOI is a nonpartisan organization by definition, but we certainly support voting as an American democratic institution. So thank you. This is one time when I can really say thank you for your work, Carolyn, and for the work of the League of Women Voters. And thanks for coming by this morning.
Voting is democracy.
Voting is democracy. I like that. Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Great public servants, Jerry Hyde, Youth Services Manager at Ames Public Library, is making plans to step down from her post. I'm Mike Murphy, and I usually make a more silent contribution to local talk running the soundboard. However, having worked with Jerry for over a year here, engineering her program from the library, which will air later today on KHOI at noon, Reading Radio. So it is my pleasure on Local Talk to take a few moments to take note of Jerry's service and what it has meant to our community. And Jerry, thank you so much for joining us.
Not a problem. Thank you very much for inviting me. It's an honor to be on KHOI.
Absolutely. So let's start with, how long have you been with the library?
I have been, in this coming March, it will be 17 years. That I will have stepped through those doors as an official youth services person.
Wow. And if memory serves me correctly, this isn't your first radio.
No, it isn't. I started 30 years ago, actually in September in 1991, where I started at the Cherokee Public Library as the library assistant. Then in a year or so, I was the children's librarian there and moved to Clive, and in the year 2000, Clive Public Library, and opened up that new library. And then I came to Ames, and I've been here ever since.
As you look back on your career here in Ames, any particular highlights stick out?
Wow. I don't think we have enough time on the air this morning to talk about all those wonderful things that have happened. I do want to give kudos to our community. Our community couldn't support the library any better than the City of Ames citizens do. I feel very fortunate that we have the budget that we do, that we have the staffing that we do. And, you know, you can have all those wonderful things, but if no one comes, then you don't have much of anything. And we have a wonderful response, even during COVID and during these trying times. We've had wonderful support and love from our community. So I guess that would be my biggest takeaway from how great the Ames Public Library was. Secondly, not necessarily second, but on an equal playing field there or level, is all of our wonderful children, or as I call them, my kids. They, throughout the years, and you can't be in a job 30 some years or 17 years here in Ames and not have them grow up. But I am so fortunate in the highlights of watching them grow up and watching them become wonderful young community members has always been so rewarding. And of course, all those laughs and coos and giggles and all those wonderful things, the hugs that they give me.
Okay, those are good answers. I would have also accepted working with KHOI Community Radio.
Oh, did I not say that? I think I said that. Maybe it was in an accepted. Yeah, well, you can't be a youth librarian and not like to have some of the spotlight, whether it's on a radio or on a city channel. But I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy my show at KHOI, and I would definitely miss reading radio with other library people.
You were with the Ames Library when the library had to undergo a move and a restructuring of a building enhancement. Any thoughts about that?
Well, that was very interesting. I have always thought to myself that, you know, like every 5 to 8 years, you should change a position so you don't get like bored and or like you keep doing the same thing over again. And I have to say that since I've moved to Ames and moved to the Ames Public Library, that every 5 years the Ames Public Library has made a change. So between just kind of revamping some of the original pieces and then going and talking about the new library and planning that with the planners has been very exciting the whole way, and the reorganization of staffing and that some of the behind the scenes things that people didn't see have been very challenging yet rewarding. Being in a temporary location over where the Salvation Army is at this time was wonderful in many, many ways. There's opportunities there that I think our staff got to know each other. We weren't that big library that there was the adult services and youth services. It was a whole library. And I think we still benefit from that today with all of our departments knowing that we're one team and not so siloed, even having different floors now. But also, it kind of made me reminisce of my old, because in smaller libraries, you don't have 70-some people on the staff. You have two or three, so you know everyone, right?
Right.
And you do everything. So I checked out adult books and talked with adults as much as I did children's items. And so we were able to do that in the temporary location. But then there was all the excitement of what the new library was going to look like and being able to unwrap that present, if you could describe it as, for the community and for us. It's a fabulous building. I'm going to speak mostly toward the youth department because that's the one that I see every day. And how wonderful it is for our families and for our children to be able to feel special in their community and know that this is their place and their destination, at least previous to COVID, that this was a place that they could come and meet new people and play with others and share their experiences through literature and through just learning how to read.
One of my favorite parts about reading radio is hearing you read aloud, and you're quite skilled at that. Is that a skill that developed over your library career, reading to children, or were you always good at that kind of thing?
Well, funny you should say that, because now I was a non-traditional student when I graduated from Takeo Westmore back in 1991. And my major was a student design major of costume history and design and then art, both of which are theater components. So I've always loved being on stage or, you know, creating voices and reading with expression. And I can see the joy that it brings other people. And it's fun to do. So I like to share that talent. So yes, I was in theater since I was in middle school and enjoyed the stage. And now I've just taken it to there's a lot more going on in a story time than theater, but I use those skills all the time.
And you're also, in addition to the library, involved with an organization called Raising Readers. And those skills are replicated there as well. Is that right?
Definitely. Raising Readers in Story County is also an organization that loves children and loves wanting children to be successful and advocates for children for their reading and to become better readers. So we all feel that if you can read, you can be anything you want to be in our world. And sometimes that reading skill is very high level and sometimes it's medium, but you still have to have that to help you be better in a world that everything you do has letters and numbers and things that you have to know in that manner. So developing those skills through play and writing and singing and playing and reading, of course, is one of the main pieces that Raising Readers is able to do or provide as well. They also go, and we do this at the library too, but the Raising Readers, because that's their main goal is to provide that support to building those relationships for adult caregivers of children. And so they have a more defined focus, where the libraries is a more overarching focus. And so being a part of both of those organizations provides me that both of those specific goals that I can hone in on the one goal a lot in the Raising Readers. We have a great group of volunteers at Raising Readers and staff that have accomplished many things with assisting our young readers in our community to be better readers and to become readers. So both of those. And adding on to that, there's also another organization called Story County Reads, and that's what's unique about Raising Readers, too, is that they go out into the county. I am limited with the library to do Ames, Iowa stuff. Raising Readers in Story County, we can help out, help in the other communities in our county as well.
That's great. Well, Jerry, thank you so much, and congratulations on a wonderful career, and wish you the best of happiness. And we'll be visiting with you again later today at noon for Reading Radio.
Yep, I'll be reading a school book, Junie B. Jones.
Okay, great. We're looking forward to that. You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and at 7 p.m., Capital Week will be on. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard Painted Black by the Rolling Stones. This program is engineered and co-hosted by Mike Murphy. And I also want to thank Ursula Rudenberg for leading the ship. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now!, followed by Morning Masterpieces. Remember, you the listener are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.